Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Network. It's more than 200 stations all over the country on Saturday, October 13th, 2018. This is episode 1531. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Helix. Helix is driven by a simple mission: to empower every person to improve their life through DNA. Follow your DNA to a wealth of actionable insights into your ancestry, health, wellness, and more. Explore further at helix.com. And oh, by the way, you'll get 25% off when you enter the promo code TechGuy. And by LastPass, secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. And by Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people in your team are always in the loop and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet. We got home theater. We got digital photography. We got smartphones. We got smartwatches. We're going to talk about the Pixel 3 XL and the Pixelbook Slate and the Google Home. What is it called now? I forgot. the thing with the screen. And all the stuff Google announced this week. How about that? You interested in hearing all about that? Or have you already heard all about that? Are you already all up on it? People who've handled the new Google Pixel 3 XL, even though it looks surprisingly like the existing Pixel 2 and Pixel 2 XL, say it feels really great in the hand. I don't know what that means. It is no longer a metal back, so you can wirelessly charge it. That's good. That means now all three of the main cell phone manufacturers in the U.S., probably 90% of the market, Apple, Google, and Samsung. I probably even should put Google in there, really. It's just Apple and Samsung. But I'll throw in Google. All do wireless charging. Which means that someday the dream, the holy grail of wireless charging, you'll be able to go into a bar, put your phone on the bar, and it'll charge while you're having your beer. That's not the holy grail. Well, maybe some people it is. I don't know if that'll ever happen. But people have been talking about that for as long as wireless charging has been around, was 5-6 years, that someday coffee shops, hotel lobbies, anywhere there's a flat surface that you might spend some time at, have a wireless charging built in. All you have to do is put your phone on. It's not going to be that easy. It's not going to be that easy. What else did they announce? The Pixel Slate, which is a new Chromebook. They didn't replace the Pixel Book, the laptop they make. They made a tablet. It's hard to see if it's sort of competing with the iPad and sort of competing with the other tablets on the Windows side, like the Microsoft Surface Pro. It's right in that price range, but it's of Chrome OS, but it can also run Android, and now you can even run Linux apps. They mentioned that. Doesn't run Windows, though. The rumor was there maybe it was going to be able to run a dual boot version of Windows, but that did not happen. And then there's this, why can't I remember the name? The Google Home tablet, which is surprisingly tiny. if you look at it, it's kind of like their competitor to the Echo Show. And actually the screen size is roughly the same. Interesting thing though, this week Facebook announced a new tablet with a camera on it for making calls. And you put the camera in your house, and the camera can follow you around as you move around the house, which is kind of, from Facebook, kind of a tone-deaf thing, right? Because really, do you want a camera in your house that's made by Facebook that can follow you around? Is that That's a little 1984, isn't it? Of course, I immediately ordered one. Well, but there was a problem because I got, as you might remember, I dumped my Facebook account. I didn't delete it. I deactivated it. And I did that because I didn't want anybody to impersonate me, right? So if it's deactivated, nobody else can get my name. And I realized in order to get this Facebook camera phone, I have to reactivate Facebook. Oh, they keep pulling me in. I hate that. Oh, well, it'll just be for a little while, I'm sure. I said to my mom, I said, do you want, because you got to get two of them, right? Because you can't call anybody except somebody else with a Facebook camera phone. Well, actually, that's not true, because if somebody has Messenger on their regular phone, you can call them. But I said to my mom, because we talk over FaceTime, I said, why don't I send you this? Your camera will follow you around. She said, absolutely not. What are you, crazy? What are you, nuts? She's not even on Facebook. Never mind. Got a there was an opinion piece in the New York Times by a kind of a legendary security guy, a lecturer at the Harvard Kennedy School and security guru Bruce Schneier. About he says the headline: Internet hacking is about to get much worse. Oh boy! And then I realized, well, that title isn't even as scary as the title of the book he's just put out. Click here to kill everybody. Security and survival in a connected world. So this is one of the great security gurus out there. And he's basically saying it's over. Unless we sit down as a country, as a nation, as a globe and say we're going to start to force companies to be secure, they won't. He said we've got to regulate. Our choice is no longer, he writes in the Times, between government regulation and no government regulation. Regulation is inevitable, but we have to choose between smart and ill-advised government regulation. This is not something to fear. Regulation doesn't stifle innovation. In fact, well-written regulation will spur innovation by creating new markets for security technologies. He's basically saying that companies have no incentive to make their stuff secure. It just costs money. There's really no payoff. You get punished in the press, but look at Equifax. That huge breach of 14 million records, all of our private information, financial information leaked out. And did they pay a fine? No. They got a little, dinged in the press and then went on with business. In fact, actually, I think they made money because then they told everybody, oh, you need credit monitoring and we'll be glad to sell that to you. Unbelievable. There is a this title, Click Here to Kill Everybody, actually is probably a little impolitic right now because, well, there's a big story in the news you probably heard about the Saudi Arabian journalist who has disappeared, and the Turkish government says Jamal Khashoggi was tortured and murdered in the Saudi embassy in Istanbul. And we know, they say, we're 100% certain because, and this is the tech angle, Khashoggi, knowing that he was probably at risk, wore an Apple Watch when he went into the embassy, the Saudi embassy, and turned on recording and had the recordings sent to his phone, which was outside the embassy, and apparently recorded his arrest and murder. I don't think you're going to see that one in an Apple ad. They talk a lot about how it saves lives. I don't think that is still fascinating. Actually, CNN now is saying, maybe it didn't happen quite that way. But it's not so far-fetched, is it? I mean, it could have happened that way. Whether it did or not is not the issue. But there's an app I've used all the time. A lot of journalists use it on your Apple Watch called Just Press Record. It records audio on your Apple Watch kind of surreptitiously, right? You don't have to hold the watch up. It just, you're wearing it. Records the audio and then downloads it to your phone at after a little bit of time. So the CNN says it's probably didn't happen because an Apple Watch with LTE data, the kind that Apple's been selling for the last couple of years, won't roam in another country, won't get LTE data in another country. I'm not sure that that's true. I think it's more complicated than that. But that doesn't matter really, does it? That's not the point. The point is that it's just a matter of time before somebody does that. You can do that. I have this big red button I can press on my watch. Actually, I have a little red button because it's a complication. So it's a little tiny red button. And if I press it right now, it'll start recording surreptitiously. It doesn't put a big timer up or anything like that. It just records. Another use for the Apple Watch. 8888 Ask Leo. The website, by the way, which is free, open to all, no sign up, no fee, is techguylabs.com. All the questions and answers will be put up there. Techguylabs.com. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. There she is. The wonderful, the supremely talented. There is no better phone answerer in the world, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got nothing.
I gave you a big buildup.
I know.
Maybe I should have said something like amazing singer and dancer or something. Then you'd have something to do. Because what are you going to do if I say amazing phone answer? All you can do is
the phone.
Hello.
Hello. One ringy dingy.
So who should I talk to here?
Andrew in Miami is in the Apple world. But he wants to switch to the Pixel 3.
Yikes!
And that's a very scary, daunting thought when all of his stuff is on the Apple platform.
Yeah.
So how can he make a smooth transition?
How can he do it?
Can he? Can't he?
It's kind of not a good name to be Andrew in Miami, is it? Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Leo.
Thank you, Kim. Welcome. So you're ready to leave Apple. Why?
Well, my last Android phone was the HTC Evo 1 many, many years ago.
Yeah, I remember
it. I've seen where Google has come with the Pixel 3, and I really just want to switch.
You know, the Pixel 3 camera is blowing me away. I don't have it yet. I can't wait. I'm going to get it Thursday. But the pictures I've seen and the stories I've seen about what it can do, Google really has mastered something called computational photography, which is to take a camera phone lens, which is, you know, inevitably not the greatest because it's got to be so small, and make great images. It's even doing something that camera phones have never been good at, which is a digital zoom. It's not optical, but digital zoom that's using multiple images to actually look good. If that really works as advertised, that will be a breakthrough. So I'm very excited about the Pixel 3. I can't wait to get it. Everybody's raving about the shape, the feel of it. It's a edge-to-edge. People aren't crazy about the notch, but you might as well get used to it. Everything's going to have a notch because in order to make an edge-to-edge screen, you've got to leave a little space for cameras up at the top. A lot of people have said they don't like the notch from pictures. But I've talked to people who have held the phone and said it's not this. You know, you get as used to it as quickly as you do with the Apple iPhone notch. That's that black square at the top of the screen, which is where the cameras go. So you have some trepidations?
Yeah, because I have an Apple TV, and I'm worried about maybe – I know AirPlay's not going to work.
Nope.
Between the
– Nope, there is no AirPlay on Android, yeah. Nor will there won't be a remote app anymore. Although if you had an iPad or something like that, you'd probably solve that conundrum. Do you have a Mac, you said? No?
Well, no, I have an iPad Mini 4, so I guess I'll just keep that in my room and use that.
That's now your TV device. You can AirPlay from that. You can do the remote on that. That's a great TV device. In fact, it's just the right size for your coffee table.
Yeah, that'll be great. I guess I'll wait till the 18th or the 20th around that time when people start getting them in their hands.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea to wait till everybody has one and then, you know, see if there's any what we call showstoppers. I'll get mine on Thursday, and next weekend I'll have a full report for you. The real, you know, the issue with Android versus iOS is kind of like Windows versus Mac. There isn't a clear winner. It really depends on you and your needs. I like Android because it's more customizable. I can make it do what I want it to do. Apple, for instance, you have one, you know, way to do the home screen with, you know, every icon has one and only one presence, whether in a folder or not on the home screen. And that's it. It's a grid of icons or folders. On Android, you can put widgets on the screen. You can have clocks. You can have calendars. You can have weather. I have a to-do list. I have my news. I have video. I have all sorts of widgets that make the phone very usable because I don't have to launch an application. I can control things directly from the phone's home screen. I think that's great. I think you'll find that all the apps, almost all the apps that you use on iOS are available on Android. They're very, you know, and in some cases are better because Android is a little bit more open. And so apps are allowed to do a little bit more. And that brings us to the downside of Andrew security, Android, not Andrew. Andrew, there's no downside to you. the downside of Android is security. And I think if you get the Google phone, security is going to be much less of an issue because Google obviously updates their phone faster than any other phone. So it's getting the security patches every month right away. So there's an advantage to that. I don't think security is really a big issue, even though there are, you know, far more things to worry about on Android, because you're not a target. If you were a target, you know, of some nation state, I'd worry. That I wouldn't carry an Android phone, probably. I'd probably carry an Apple phone. When you go to hacker conventions, most people don't bring an Android phone. They bring their Apple phone. Or no phone, or a Nokia candy bar phone, which would probably be the best. But I don't think a normal person is going to be at risk security-wise. You have to be targeted, I think. So I think in general, it's going to be pretty sweet. It is fairly easy to move from an iPhone. Most apps you will have to rebuy, however. They don't give you credit for having owned the iPhone version. But most apps are free. So it's not going to be a huge expense. Is there anything else that concerns you?
No, because I've gone like full bore into the Google, their OS system. Like I use Inbox on my iPhone. I use the Google Calendar instead of the Apple Calendar.
Oh,
I've got Google Photos, Google Maps.
Yeah.
My car has Android Play and
you're gonna be good.
Apple Auto. So
yeah, you'll be good. One piece of bad news in all of that: Google is discontinuing Inbox. So
yeah, I heard about that. I'm not too happy about that.
What is with Google? Inbox. They announced this week that the Wall Street Journal revealed that Google knew about a security flaw in Google Plus many months ago, fixed it, but didn't tell anybody about it. And apparently nobody, you know, was hit by it. It wasn't a huge flaw anyway. But Google said, but we're going to kill Google Plus anyway. Wait, no, we're done with that. They put so much effort into this thing. This was going to be their Facebook killer. At one point, Google Plus... it was so important to Google that they based everybody in the company's bonuses on the success of Google's social efforts, i.e. Google Plus. And now Google's, you know, you kind of have to admire them. They got chutzpah. They got something else. We're going to just dump it. We don't need Google. We don't need no Google Plus. Wow. 8888 Ask Leo. Enjoy your Pixel 3. I think you're going to like it. But yeah, wait for the reviews. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And there's some things that I think are better. You know, we just saw battery life tests of Samsung Note 9 versus iPhone, about 30% battery life improvement. The camera, I think, arguably, they're close, but arguably the camera might be better on the Google Plus, on the Pixel 3. What else? I like fingerprint. You're going to keep fingerprint. To me, fingerprint is just the fastest, easiest way to unlock. So that's nice. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's our home theater geek. He joins us every week to talk about home theater. He was up here last week.
Oh, man, that was so much fun.
Did you enjoy that, what was it, Hisense 100-inch projection TV?
Absolutely. It's beautiful. Calibrated well. Great.
Yeah, yeah, because we got brought in the pros from Dover to calibrate it.
Me.
Did a great job.
Me and Robert Herron. I have to give Robert Herron props for coming up and lending his eyes and gear.
Yeah. We've been watching it ever since, and it really looks good.
Yeah.
So Thank you for calibrating it and for reviewing it for us. What do you want to talk about in home theater this week, Scott?
Well, actually, I went out to the movies this week.
Oh.
I went to see First Man.
The story of Neil Armstrong walking on the moon.
Well, I guess that's kind of an ancillary story to this movie.
I have to say, I'm going to say this right away. You may enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
But it really saddens me. I was so upset about it, I wrote a blog post when I got home. Because I feel like they shouldn't let Hollywood touch modern history, recent history, because they just bollocks it up. And it was more about, and I don't even know if this is true, the Neil Armstrong's inability to communicate and say he loved his children, than it was about the most important exploration and scientific achievement of our lifetime and probably of the millennium, maybe of all time, landing a man on the moon and bringing him home.
That's right. That's right. I was totally disappointed at that, too, although I have read that some of the interactions, in particular, when Neil Armstrong's wife says, "You must tell your kids that you might not be coming back," that apparently was close to verbatim, according to his sons, who were there when he told them that. Good. But in any event, I still
didn't like
the
movie. But is that the most important part about landing a man on the moon?
No.
Neil Armstrong was an astronaut. He had the right stuff. He wasn't a big talky, lovey, touchy-feely guy. So what?
Yeah, exactly.
And he, by the way, was a hugely dignified guy after he walked on the moon.
Absolutely.
For his entire life, he passed away a few years ago. And in every respect, loved and respected by everyone. And he didn't get all nutty about it. He just did his job, and that's what you want in an astronaut. And by the way, there's a scene in the movie at the end. I don't want to spoil anything.
Well, how can you spoil it? We know what happened.
But he does this thing at the end that didn't ever happen. They made up.
Oh,
you know, with his with the bracelet. It never happened.
Oh, right.
That was completely made up. They shouldn't. They gave this guy, who is not a great director, he got a lot of accolades and almost won the best movie award. Except he didn't last year
for La La Land.
For La La Land, Damon Chazelle should never have given it to him. Give it to Ron Howard. Did an amazing job, but with Apollo 13.
I thought Apollo 13 was much better.
Give it to Spielberg.
Historical movie.
Give it to Tom Hanks. Give it to somebody who can make the right movie. Not this guy. He made it La La Land for the moon. I mean. No! Tell me. There's no singing and dancing, but the music when they're doing the moonscape is kind of crappy.
I agree. I totally agree with you. I was not happy with the music. I was not happy with all of the handheld fast whip.
Well, that's another. I want to ask you because you saw it in IMAX. I just saw it in Atmos Dolby Theater, which is very, very nice.
Yeah,
and it's really when they're getting launched. There are some good things to this movie, and one thing is, I don't know how accurate it is. But if that's what it feels like getting launched, wow.
I know.
It's shaky. The rocket's banging. Like, stuff's banging. Like, it's falling apart.
Yeah.
And
the immersive sound is amazing. No question about that.
I'd have hated to see it in IMAX, though. You saw it in IMAX.
Well, I did. And the reason I did was that most of the movie is in an aspect ratio that's typical for movies called 2.35:1, which means the width, the image is 2.35 times wider than it is tall. But then during the moon, the lunar scenes, after they actually land on the moon, the aspect ratio gets taller. And if you go see it in an IMAX film theater, of which there are only a few, it really gets taller. I didn't see that. I saw it in a laser IMAX, the Chinese theater in Hollywood, the famous Chinese theater. And it opens up a little bit. And it's meant to make the moon vistas look more dramatic. And I'm sure it does. It did a little bit. It went from 2.35 to 1.9. And so it got a little taller and a little more impressive. But only in the last few minutes of the movie, it wasn't worth it to me. And I wish I had seen it in Dolby Cinema, because the shadow detail, of which there's a lot in this movie, was not very good. In the IMAX presentation I saw. So there were many things to complain about technically. The sound was not one of them. The sound was beautiful. but I wish I had seen it in an IMAX that really opened up at the end. But I'm afraid that would not have saved the movie for me. It was still a pretty disappointing movie.
When they
movie.
Do stuff like that, it kind of takes me out of the film. I mean,
yeah, it does. Yeah. It,
you know, suddenly you're aware of the fact that, oh, there's a, I'm watching a movie, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wish they wouldn't do that kind of gimmicky stuff.
Well, in some cases, it's effective.
Yeah.
But I, you know, Ryan Gosling just looking pensive out into space so much, it's just like, come on.
And did Neil Armstrong really sound like he came from Minnesota? Yeah, sure, you betcha. That accent,
I don't
first
remember.
Of all, he's from Wisconsin. Yeah. Second of all, that accent came and went. And I feel bad because Claire Foy, who's so good in The Crown, right?
Yep.
Really didn't. They gave her nothing but anger in this. She's peeved the whole time at him because he just won't say he's going to the moon to the boys. He just won't do it. So angry.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Yeah. It was. And also, there was so much silence and pensiveness as they're waiting to blast off. I would think, oh, man, they'd be doing all these checks and all this stuff. And no, they're just sitting there going, wow, we're about to make history, man.
Oh, please. You get the feeling that maybe it's not the most historically accurate thing ever. They did. I did read articles that said that Chazelle had paid great attention to detail. All the switches were right. But the switches looked like they were about to fall off.
They were all grungy. I mean, come on.
The bolts were rusty. I don't think that's accurate. I don't. And really, does a rocket bang around a lot when it's being launched? Are falling off?
That we don't know. I mean, that could be, you know, the ice falling off the, you know.
I think the ice is accurate, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Watch a documentary if you want to know what happened. The thing that saddens me is that I think in some ways movies like this are going to be the history books of the future, that this will be accepted truth, that this is who Neil Armstrong was. And I think that's a disservice to Mr. Armstrong, who is like our Magellan. He is like, right?
Yeah.
An amazing scientific feat, which was kind of downplayed.
It was kind of downplayed. Absolutely. There was nothing, for example, in the liftoff from the moon where Armstrong had to basically get from Buzz. I said, oh, something's not working here. Can you hand me a fountain pen or ballpoint pen? And he had to stick it in there to make something work that they could let take off. There's nothing about that.
Yeah, there's so many. Yeah, this is not the great movie.
No. The surround sound is great, and the opening up during the moon sequence, had I seen that in a IMAX film theater, that would have been more impressive, I'm sure. But if you're going to go see it, go to Dolby.
And by the way, there's I feel like with IMAX, you should put the camera on tripods once in a while. It was all very cinema verite, you know, shaky over somebody's shoulder. And I thought, I'm glad I didn't see this in IMAX because it seems like it would make you a little queasy.
I got a little queasy. There's no doubt.
All right. Well, there's a stunning review for a movie. It nauseated me. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. Well, more calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, no, they left out the pen to reset the breaker in order to make up a phony thing about him throwing his daughter's hospital bracelet in the crater.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Gosling is not our greatest. He's not an Olivier.
No.
Well, so which... maybe
I suppose playing a taciturn character
was perfect for him. Yeah, he gets the William Hurt Award for Wooden.
Yes. I'm sorry. I agree. I'm glad I
don't want to poison the movie for people who it's a perfectly fine movie, I guess. I liked Whiplash, although I had problems with Whiplash too. I don't think anybody really learns music by getting sadistically browbeaten.
No. No, I agree with that.
And I had problems with La La Land because I like musicals where the actors can sing and dance. It's just call me crazy. I feel like Chazelle should not be given a movie of this import.
Yeah, I agree. The dance in La La Land, I agree with you completely. The dancing was very rudimentary. And I know that I think it was Emma Stone. I can't remember. I went and saw it twice, actually, to double check and make sure. One of them, I'm pretty sure it was Emma Stone, definitely had auto-tune on her voice.
Because neither of them is a singer.
No. So I resented
that movie, too, because it was a white man saving jazz, which is utter BS.
Yep.
What else did I hate? Oh, if it's a musical, you should go out of the musical humming the tunes. Good luck humming any of those tunes.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that was great about that was the opening sequence on the L.A. freeway.
On the freeway. Mm-hmm.
But
I agree.
So it's a shame because Hollywood, I think, you know, he's obviously the flavor of the month. And they said, oh, give it to Chazelle. His unique perspective will make it.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I shouldn't go on. People should see the movie. It's not a bad movie. I just felt like it's bad history, and that bothered me a little bit.
Yeah. Valvi in the chat room is mentioning Hidden Figures. Now, that was a great
movie. There's great movies about NASA. Hidden Figures was amazing. There were many people that could have done a better job, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's asking me.
Well, actually, next week, let's talk about, I didn't think I might get a chance to do it this time, but it relates, which is movies that have at least some of their material shot on IMAX cameras and have a different aspect ratio. So some of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, for example, you know, they go from 2.35 to taller, and that's an intentional effect. And IMAX just announced with DTS that they're going to make enhanced for IMAX releases that actually do that in a better way than we currently do. And that was just recently announced, and it could be an important thing for home theater.
Interesting.
So we'll talk about that next week, maybe.
Good. Well, you got a minute more. You can talk about that now if you want.
I can. That's true. Or I can answer some questions.
Save it for next week. Yeah.
Yeah, let me save it for next week.
Can you stay to the top?
Yep.
Of the hour? All right.
Yep. Good. Happy to.
All yours.
Chumley, they need a movie about the Challenger. That's a very good idea. Of course, they could screw that up too. Don't give it to Chazelle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now I feel terrible. Damien, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
I liked La La Land better than most people. Yes, you couldn't really sing the tunes.
No, most people loved it. It was a huge hit.
I really liked it. Whiplash was creepy. It made my skin crawl because I've been a music student.
Well, yeah. So there you go. What do you think?
It certainly wasn't representative of my education.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I will say I did have one professor at Northridge who was, and this wasn't a performance professor, it was a class, and he was pretty brutal.
That brutal?
Not that brutal, no.
stick around, Scott.
Yeah, happy to.
Thanks. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, and Mike in Santa Monica's next. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I have an issue at my home computer.
Okay.
When I'm trying to log into Yahoo, it keeps telling me my password is wrong. But when I go to my office and I go on my work computer, everything seems fine.
So you can, are you using the password or does your work computer remember you?
No, each time I use my password.
Each time you use your password. So it's working at home, not working at home, but working at work. Same exact process, login, same browser.
Yes.
Different computer though, huh?
Yes.
Boy, that's an interesting conundrum. Doesn't seem possible. Is it, you're sure your keyboard is typing all the keys properly? You know, one thing you might try, and I know it always bugs me, and I guess they're worried about people shoulder surfing, watching over your shoulders, your type of password. So they only show, you know, they show dots instead of your password. I would try typing out your password in, you know, Microsoft's Notepad or something where you can see it and then pasting it in just to make sure that your keyboard's doing what you think. You know, there's buttons you could press on the keyboard to put it in num lock or scroll lock or different situations that maybe you're not getting the same keys. So type out the password in Notepad and so that you can see it and make sure it's correct and then paste it in and see if that works at home. If the passwords are identical, then it might be there's something on your home computer that Yahoo's looking at. For instance, a token. So the other thing to do is to either try it with a different browser or clear the cookies and history in the browser you're using. So if you're on Windows, almost all Windows machines have at least two browsers, often more. If you have Windows 10, you have Edge, which is the primary browser, but Internet Explorer is hidden in there. You might download Google's Chrome browser or Firefox from Mozilla and try it with that. That would be in lieu of clearing cookies. You could also just try clearing the cookies and see.
One other quick question, Leo.
Yeah.
Is there a way to stop? I have a Samsung S9 Plus and it has that pattern you need to go through.
Yeah.
Is there a way to shut the pattern off?
Oh, absolutely. If you go in the security preferences, you have a choice in the S9 of fingerprint, pattern, face recognition / iris recognition, numeric. You don't want anything at all? You don't want to lock it at all?
No, nothing.
All right. I got to point out that that's risky. I mean, somebody gets your phone, they can do anything they want with it.
Okay.
You understand that, right? The pattern the pattern isn't very secure. It's the least secure method. I usually tell people, put a password on there, you know, but it's a pain, I know, every time you want to unlock it. Fingerprint's pretty good, and that S9 has a fingerprint reader on the back. Once you train that, it's about the quickest way to launch it and still gives you the security of protecting it. So that would be, maybe I would recommend that. But if you don't want it, if you don't want anything, you can absolutely turn it off. It's in the settings in the, I can't remember what they call it, probably the security settings. I can look at it.
Can anybody visit your studio or do you need to make an invitation?
No, anybody can, but we do appreciate it if you send us an email first. tickets@twit.tv. We'll send you directions. And it's also good because that way you make sure I'm here and all that stuff. Sometimes I'm not.
Thanks, Leo.
We'd love appreciate to see you.
Thanks.
Take care. Yeah, we're up in Northern California in the Petaluma area. And Lynette and Nick drove all the way up here from L.A. for Lynette's birthday. And I don't know, Nick. She just doesn't seem to be really enjoying it that much. Nick's having a great time. He's got a bag of chips. He's watching. He's having fun. But Lynette's like, okay, is it time to go somewhere else yet? Bring your spouse. It's always fun. Oh, no, I'm just teasing. Lynette's a very good sport. Debbie, Fort Mojave, Arizona. Hello, Debbie.
Hi, Leo.
Thanks for holding on.
Oh, well, I hope you can help me because I'm at a complete loss.
Uh-oh. What's the matter?
Well, I think I had a power outage, and when it came back on, my screensaver was gone. But my biggest problem is it's not opening any of my pictures anymore. I go into all of my backup of my pictures from my iPhone and from my camera rolls and from my camera, and I double click or I click open with Picasa, which was my default, and it says cannot find window class, and it won't open the picture.
So you rebooted the computer, right? Do you know what that means? You turn it off and on again?
You know, I can't remember if I did or not.
Yeah, try that first. So the first thing to do is to go into it's Windows. Windows shut down and just shut the computer all the way down. Count to 10, then push the power button and boot it up again and see if that fixes it. If it doesn't, then maybe you suffered some hard drive damage. And it is true that when the power blinks out, even if it's only for a second, there's two things that can happen that are bad for computers. They're very sensitive to power. Whether it's a spike, and you know, a lot of times when the power goes out, when it comes back on, it's boom, it's a big spike, and that can just fry stuff. But also low power, brownout power, which often is a precursor to a failure, power failure, it goes real low. That can also damage stuff. And then, of course, there's, I bet you, it's pretty dry in Fort Mojave, I'm thinking. Do you have static electricity issues?
No.
Okay, that's good. Because when it's really dry like that, sometimes static, and that chips are very sensitive to all of that. So it is possible.
I do have a static mat under.
Good. Yeah, that's important. So it's possible that during the power outage, something physically went wrong with your computer. That is not unheard of. In fact, I generally tell people it's a good idea to spend maybe $100. You know, a lot more than that on your computer. $100 on a nice, something from, I got my mom, I just got one because I got her a new TV, a Cyber Power. And it's a sign, you want something that does sign power conditioning. It has a little battery in it. If the power goes out, it'll keep the machine running a little bit, not for a long time, but just long enough for you to shut it down properly. The real problem, and it might be, this sounds like what it might have happened to you, is even if you didn't get a surge or a spike of power, when the power goes out, if the computer's in the middle of doing something, like writing to the drive, and the power goes out, it can spew data right across the drive. And so It's not a physical, in that case, it's not a physical error, but it might be enough to erase or corrupt a key file. It sounds like that might be what happened to you. If that's the case, that's an easy one to fix. It's not a hardware fault. So you can get your Windows boot disk and run a repair routine on that. If you don't have a Windows boot disk, if you're on Windows 10, you can get to Microsoft's, they call it the Windows Media Creation Tool. Download a copy of the version of Windows you need. Don't worry about the serial number. If you're Windows 10, you're already activated. And you can run the installer from the USB key and then choose the repair option. And sometimes that'll repair whatever files got damaged. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by, we got a brand new sponsor. Oh, I just did it too, and I'm very excited. Helix. Helix. From profound discoveries to playful exploration, Helix offers a variety of DNA power products to help you and your family live richer, fuller lives. You know, I'm a big fan of these new inexpensive genetic kits. This one's the Genographic Project from National Geographic, Geno 2.0 Next Generation from Helix. It's the simplest thing in the world. You just spit into a vial. I did it the other day. I haven't got my results back yet, but I can't wait to see them. And you can learn all sorts of stuff about you, your family, your ancestors. A lot of material, too, about your health and wellness and well-being. I love it that they're doing this with National Geographic. That's a perfect partnership, isn't it? It's very affordable, and you can use the DNA results from Helix to do things like find a better diet for yourself, explore your ancestry, fine-tune your exercise regimen. I think it's one of the things I'm going to do right away. It couldn't be easier to do. You get the kit, you go online, you register your account, and you can learn about health, fitness, nutrition, family, and your ancestry. When you order that product, you receive everything you need. Simple instructions. I'll show you the collection tube. It's really, really, really straightforward. You just got a little vial you spit in. About three spits is all it takes. And you mail it in a prepaid box. And a few weeks later, you'll get your results. As soon as I get my results, I'll share them with you. It's pretty cool. After your sample's been sequenced, you're going to get insights into a huge variety of topics, and you don't need to submit another sample to get it all. They've got it. You're on file. Discover what traits you have in common with Neanderthals. Find better wines for your particular palate. Get help losing weight. Compare yourself to world-class athletes with Helix. Follow your DNA. You can find out more at H-E-L-I-X, helix.com. And when you use the offer code TECHGUY, we're going to get you 25% off. 25% off right now. Helix.com. And use the offer code TECHGUY. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll as soon as I get my results back, I just did it Wednesday. I mailed it in. Lisa did it. My son did it. I'm looking forward to comparing with my son. It can sometimes be surprising. I know, for instance, and I'm curious, Lisa's dad gave her a picture of his grandfather, her great-grandfather, whose son's great-great-grandfather, and Lisa's son, Michael, 15 years old, is the spitting image of his great-great-great-grandfather. I mean, the spitting image. He was a boxer in Mexico City. And Michael's big and strong. We couldn't figure out, where is this? He's 15 years old. He's over 6 feet tall. And we couldn't figure it out. Now I think we know. That's where your DNA gets very interesting. Helix.com. H-E-L-I-X.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY at checkout. Save 25%. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you 513 seconds of Scott. And I'm going to go get a cup of coffee.
Go get a cup of coffee.
Enjoy!
Hey, everybody. So happy to be with you. I was so glad to be in the TWIT studios last week. It was loads of fun. And now here I am back in home. Mike Mann asks, which device should I use to upconvert 1080p to 4K? Vizio M65 or Yamaha Receiver RX V681? Well, that's a really good question. and a perennial question at that. what I would, I don't know which one is better, but it's easy for you to check, which is depending upon what you're using to play, I guess, upconvert 1080p. So are you using a Blu-ray player or an Ultra HD Blu-ray player? Because if it's a UHD Blu-ray player, that's a third place you could upconvert from. So the question is, which one is best? And the answer is, give it a try. So let's presume for the moment that you have a Blu-ray player. So it's not going to, it's only going to put out 1080p. So you put a Blu-ray in there. Pardon me. You put a Blu-ray in there and you play it. And it goes through the receiver and it goes to the TV. So the first thing to try is to set the receiver to upconvert. And play this, play a title, a Blu-ray disc that you know well, and play it with the receiver doing the upconverting. And so the receiver does the upconverting to 4K and sends that to the TV. And the TV says, oh, this is a 4K signal. I'll just display it as it is. So watch a scene or two that you're very familiar with. Then go back and watch that same scene again, but turn off the upconversion in the receiver. So the receiver gets 1080p, it sends 1080p to the TV. The TV sees 1080p and says, oh, this is, I need to upconvert this. So it does the upconversion. Watch the same scene again. Do you see any difference? If so, which one looks better? Answer that question, and that will tell you which one to use. If you're doing it from a UHD Blu-ray player, then you do that three times. You do it with the UHD Blu-ray player upconverting. Then you turn the UHD Blu-ray player's upconversion off, and you just say, you just tell it to play whatever's on that disc, pass it out without doing anything to it, and then let the receiver do it, and then turn that off and let the TV do it. Which one looks best? That's the best way to do it. Jim Ford, do I like the Samsung Note 9? I have no idea. I'm an Apple phone guy myself, an iPhone guy. So I know not from, I know nothing about Samsung or Android phones. Sandman, what AV receiver did you purchase for home? I purchased a Denon. I currently, it's actually a couple of years old now. It's the X6200W. They're now up to the 6400. I believe the model nomenclature is very interesting. And in the case of Denon, the model year is indicated, their number within the model designation is four digits. Typically, the second number in those four digits is indicates the model year. Web 4488, which is better, OLED, LG, or Sony? Ooh, that is really tough. There is no clear winner, I don't think. There are some differences, certainly, but the LG C8 and above, not the B8, but the C8 and above, have LG's newest video processor, which is excellent. Sony's latest OLED, called the A8F, has their X1 Ultimate processor, which is also extremely good. So which one is better picture quality-wise? I think that would be a hard one to say a clear winner. The Sony has one advantage, if you're into this, which is its own internal sound system consists of speakers or actuators that are physically connected to the screen itself. And the screen itself produces the mids and high frequencies. The low frequencies are still done by a built-in, quote-unquote, subwoofer. Because low frequencies vibrating the screen, you would see that. But the mids and highs, you don't see. So, and it's surprisingly effective. It's the best onboard TV sound I know of, by far. By far. So, you know, if it's in the bedroom, say, and you don't have an external sound system with it, I would get the Sony. But, you know, you're spending thousands of dollars on one of these TVs, and you're probably going to want an external sound system, at least a sound bar. But if you don't want to do any of that, the Sony. Otherwise, I think it's a wash. There aren't the difference between them is very small, I would say. Emily the Strange, this tech stuff moves too fast. I just got into Blu-ray. Yeah, well, that's the way it's always going to be. Yeah, right. Exactly, Emily the Strange. Only 1080p, what I was talking about earlier. You know, and now we're coming up on 8K. And we're going to see 8K TVs probably, if not this year, certainly next year. We're going to see them for sale. No doubt about it. Now, is there going to be any 8K content? No. Virtually none. There will be some in Japan for the, and possibly Korea for the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. But otherwise, virtually none for years. We don't even have over-the-air broadcast in 4K. So we're not going to have 8K for a while. So, in other words, what are those 8K TVs going to display? Well, they're going to display 4K or 1080p or even, you know, 480p. DVD. And so the real question about 8K TVs, because they're going to be here whether we like it or not. And the real question is, how good is the upscaler? And if the upscaler is good, and the Samsung, in the Samsung's case, for example, their 8K TV that's coming out, the processor, the upscaler is amazing. Uses artificial intelligence to learn about upscaling, and it gets better over time. So, I think that's going to be pretty interesting. There are some, I would say, some indications that 8K resolution actually is, we can actually see the difference as human beings, or at least those with normal vision, fair, whatever you call that. And there are studies that indicate that, that we might actually be able to see the difference. I have to look more into that. I would have doubted that, but I have it from some good authorities that that might very well be true. Scooter X, does the Sony OLED support Dolby Vision? Yes, it does. Both of them do. The LGs are the only one that support Technicolor HDR. How important that is at the moment, it's not at all. Could it be in the future? Yes, it could. And as far as I know, the Sony doesn't do that, but its processor could certainly be programmed to. There we go.
Mr. Scott, thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Week.
All right,
you
take
too.
Care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. I got your smartphones. I got your smartwatches. All that jazz. 888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S., or Canada. I was just walk down the hall to visit our CFO, my wife, and she was upset because we have a check scanning machine. You know, instead of going to the bank to deposit the check, she has this little machine. It scans it in, sends it over the internet. It's great. She didn't have to spend time going down to make deposits at the bank, except that. And this is a big, well-known bank. I won't name names. I don't want to humiliate anyone. But this check scanning machine only works with two-year-old browsers. If you update your browser, it says, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. But no browser, no good browser, doesn't update itself. These days, an out-of-date browser is a recipe for disaster. The worst kind of disaster, if it happens to be accessing your checking account at the bank. It just drives me crazy, and I think that you see this all the time. Companies, you know, obviously this bank, big bank, I think it's one of the biggest banks in the nation. Big national bank. It's not some local rinky-dink bank. It's a big bank. Didn't want to spend the money, I guess, to update their software. So we have to install a two-year-old version of Firefox for it to work. A two-year-old version of Firefox. Now, good luck keeping it as a two-year-old version of Firefox, because the minute Firefox goes online, it says, whoa, whoa, wait a minute, hold on there. I see version 70 available. I'm going to download or whatever it is, and downloads it, installs it automatically. Crazy, crazy. I know, I mean, this is probably someday people won't write checks anymore, but until that day comes, come on, banks, keep your software up to date. This is crazy. And this ties back to the Bruce Schneier book I was talking about in the article. Bruce Schneier, probably one of the premier experts in computer security, said government has to step in because companies will not make their software secure unless they're forced to. That's the only solution. We've seen this time and time again. Unless there are laws, we have, you know, laws that make cars safe. We got to have laws that make software safe. And give companies responsibility if they don't. It's a perfect example. A check scanner that only works if you use insecure two-year-old software. Come on. Come on, man. Google got in the news. I started talking about this last hour. Wall Street Journal put a piece up. Wall Street Journal does not like Google. We know this. Maybe you don't know the backstory of why the Wall Street Journal doesn't like Google. They publish more negative articles about Google than any other company. Positive always about Apple, but not about Google. Why would that be? Well, I'll tell you why. The Wall Street Journal, like all newspapers, relies on display ads on its printed pages or on its website. And guess who's really kind of killed that model? Facebook and Google. They're just eating them alive. And all newspapers are suffering because of it, but it seems like only the Wall Street Journal really wants to get Google back for it. So they wrote an article that really was scathing about Google. They called it a breach. They said that Google Plus, they found the emails that Google Plus had a flaw that allowed third-party programs to access your Google Plus profile information, even if it was marked private. Now, when that came out, I looked at my Google Plus profile, and there's no credit cards there. The only thing you put there, you know, there was two things I had private: my home address, yeah, I don't want that to get out, and my personal cell phone number, I don't want that to get out. But it's not the end of the world. It's not like they got my social security number or my credit card. You don't put that on your Google Plus profile. It's essentially a public profile with a few private fields. I think that I can't even remember because Google Plus is so old now, but I think the private fields were for friends and family only, that kind of thing. So some outside party got information that I intended only for friends and family. And by the way, Google, when confronted with this, said, well, okay, so we found it in May. We had no evidence that anybody had figured this out or was using it. So we fixed it. And that's that. And this happens all the time. Microsoft finds flaws in Windows all the time. They don't necessarily reveal it. They fix it. If nobody gets bit by it, they fix it. And until GDPR went into effect later in this year, nobody had to say anything about it. I don't know if Google would have a duty to disclose now. But there was no breach. That's the key. And Wall Street Journal initially, they changed the headline later, called it a breach. A breach implies that somebody got in and got that data, but there was no evidence of that at all. It wasn't a breach. It was a software flaw, which happened all the time and was fixed. Maybe Google should have told the world. I don't know. You can debate that. Google, I don't know if it's related, but Google says they are doing an entire root and branch, that's what they call it, survey of all of the stuff they do to let third-party developers use Gmail or Google Plus or any of their stuff. You know, you can sign up for a system and give it permission to go through your Gmail to, like, TripIt, which I use for planning. It will look at my Gmail and look for confirmations from airlines and hotels and then make an itinerary for me on TripIt. And I like that. I turn that on. I think that's a nice feature. Some people don't like it, but of course you have to turn it on. Google says, we're going to make sure everything's doing it right, and we're going to only allow people to go through Gmail if it has a mail application. In fact, I think that's going to probably impact TripIt. They also said, and now that we found out there was a problem with Google Plus, even though we didn't tell you, we didn't think it was a big deal. We fixed it in May. We're going to close Google Plus anyway. Which, no, I don't think many people are shedding a tear over. There are a few people. My friend Trey Ratcliffe was a very famous photographer and really used Google Plus to great advantage. Because one of the things, Google Plus was Google's social network. You may not even know. I think people don't know. Part of the problem with it is that if you have a Gmail account, if you have a Google account, you have a Google Plus account. It's kind of automatic. That's kind of a problem. But you don't have to set up a full profile or use it. It's just you have an account if you want one. But one of the things that was great about Google Plus is it displayed photos beautifully. I mean, really did a nice job. And so photographers like Trey Ratcliffe and others used it and became famous. Trey had more than 1 million followers on Google Plus. He had drove a lot of traffic. I think it helped him become a household name among photography buffs. He's actually putting together a show of people saying goodbye to Google Plus. A little premature. Google Plus is going to be here through August of next year. But I thought that was an interesting reaction. Okay, Wall Street Journal. If you're going to ding us for something that isn't really dingable, we're just going to close it down. So there. We're taking our ball and going home. I think most people don't mind because if you've been on Google Plus lately, it's really fallen. Place has really fallen apart. Social networks do not do well if neglected. Have you noticed that? It's like a garden. The weeds start to grow. Spammers and trolls and just icky stuff. And that forces out the good stuff. People go, I don't want to go there anymore. And pretty soon, after you neglect it long enough, all you got is weeds. There's still some good stuff on Google Plus. It's not all weeds, but I think it's probably time to shut it down. I don't really blame Google for doing it. It's just a shame that it was a kind of scurrilous piece in the Wall Street Journal that triggered the whole thing. 8888 Ask Leo. Website, free, no sign up, techguylabs.com. Make a note of that because everything we talk about goes up there, techguylabs.com. And we'll go back to the phones right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Matt, Sebring, Florida. Hey, Matt, Leo Laporte here. Hope you're all safe and sound in Sebring.
Yeah, we're doing good, Leo. How are you doing?
Good. I'm well.
Leo, I'm calling about wanting to get a new Mac for creating music. I was considering the MacBook Air and upping the processor to the i7. And I was also looking at the Mac Mini and upping the RAM to 16 gigs and the processor to the i7. But I've been hearing rumors of that there's going to be a new Mac Mini Pro or a new Air coming out with a Retina display. So that's really what I'm holding off on.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with both the Mini and the MacBook Air is they haven't been updated since 2015.
Yeah.
So even though you'd put an i7 in it, it's a Broadwell chip. I mean, it goes way back. And so as a result, it's not modern in any respect. Although I think the MacBook Airs are amazing, where they really suffer is not the processor, because I have to say, to be honest, Intel hasn't really made great strides in the last 4 years anyway, but the screen. The screen on the MacBook Air is very low resolution. And while in 2015 that was acceptable, these days, if you look at it, it actually looks blurry. You want a Mac with a Retina display. As for the Mac Mini, well, you put your own screen on that, so that's not the problem. But it's also kind of old hardware, alas, and out of date. So that's one of the reasons people are saying, oh, there's going to be a new one. We know that we think that Apple's working on new laptops. We know that Intel just announced new chips. This year there's new mobile chips. In fact, last week they announced new desktop chips. So it's often the case that Apple comes out with a new system when new chips are available. I think there's going to be an Apple announcement for sure before the year's out, probably before the month is out, because you can't wait too long. You know, Apple's pretty good about, they don't want to announce a product too early, because that just gets people all set up for nothing, although they've done it in the past. They announced a year ago a wireless charging system, which still isn't out. So maybe they haven't learned that lesson. They told us in 2017 that a new Mac Pro would come out, maybe in 2019. So they're getting a little bit more active with the forward-looking statements, if you will. I think that there will definitely be an announcement this month. It will be an iPad announcement primarily. We're really sure about that. I think there almost has to be a replacement for the MacBook/MacBook Air. Those are their thin and light ones. And gosh, I hope they do a Mac Mini. Although the rumor about a Mac Mini Pro is very flimsy. It's not based on fact. It's based on hope almost entirely. So I'm not sure I would hold out hope that there's going to be a new Mac Mini. I think it's completely possible that Apple, which is so focused really on the profits it makes from iOS, that it's kind of neglected the Mac platform, will in fact just kill Mac Mini and MacBook Air entirely, which would be great tragedy. The Mac Mini was great because when it came out, it was designed for somebody who's using a PC. Just try a Mac. It's inexpensive. They said, put it on top of your PC tower, plug your monitor, keyboard, and mouse, the one that you already have, into it, and now you're trying a Mac. And that was really the goal, is to get developers and others to use the Mac operating system and maybe even switch over. Although I know a lot of people use it as servers. I was just looking at an old blog post from 2009 or about 10 years ago. When we started streaming video, we used 6 Mac Minis, each one dedicated to a different video service. And we called it Streamosaurus. And it was, I'll have to find the picture. It's on my blog at leolaporte.com. And it was a good use for it. I have a friend, Alex Lindsay, who does a lot of streaming productions for big companies and government. And he loves the Mac Mini. It's a great little portable server. So it'd be perfect for music. I don't think the old Mac Mini and the old MacBook Air would be good for music, however. Are you going to use Logic? What software are you going to use?
I'd like to play around with Logic in the future.
Logic's great, but it's demanding. So yeah. You need a lot of RAM and you need a powerful processor. It's very easy with Logic to get so many tracks that they get bogged down. And that's a real problem in music production. You want to be able to play back your music in real time. And if you've got 20 tracks and it can't keep up, well, that's not good. So a lot of RAM and fast processors. Fast RAM, too. I do think, ultimately, Apple has to update the MacBook Air. The MacBook Air created a category. It was the first Ultrabook. Every PC manufacturer aped the MacBook Air and said, oh, we can make a thin and light. You remember when Steve Jobs announced it? He had it in a manila envelope and he pulled it out and said, oh, look, here's a computer. Now I just got from Acer the thinnest computer. It's called the Swift 7 ever made. I think it's 8 millimeters thick. But that trend was started by Apple with the MacBook Air. I would buy a new MacBook Air if it had a Retina display and a decent processor and a lot of RAM. I would buy that in a heartbeat. You might want to look at an iMac if you need to buy it before, you know, the end of the year. I would look at an iMac. It doesn't have to be the iMac Pro, but iMac with an i7, it'll be great for music. But if you need portable or you need cheap, right? I cannot recommend the Mini and the MacBook Air. You got to wait. And I wouldn't, even if Apple doesn't announce it in October, if they only announce iPads, you still shouldn't get it. It's just too old.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Wish I had better news, but I got to be frank. It's just too old, especially for stuff that's challenging. And believe it or not, music production is fairly challenging. Now, the nice thing is all Macs come with GarageBand free. Logic's not that expensive. I think it's $200 with all the samples you could ever use. But GarageBand's free, and it's kind of basically Logic Lite. You could easily make an album, a record, a podcast, a radio show with GarageBand. And it runs pretty well, even on older Macs. Boy, I'm puzzled, but I'll be honest with you. I'm very puzzled about what the future of the Mac is. Apple says again and again, we love the Mac. We're always going to do Macs. And they did release an iMac Pro, which is pretty sweet. They put out those new MacBooks. The i9-based MacBook, which I used, is nice and fast. Pricey, but hey, it's a Mac. That's part of the deal. But I would like to see them update some of these lighter and less expensive devices for all of us. 8888 Ask Leo. Johnny Jett's not here. He's in London. He'll join us tomorrow on the show. So we'll keep taking the calls right after this. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. On we go with the show. Jay in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Hey, want to pass on to the Twit Army an extortion scam, an email extortion scam that's been going on for about the past few weeks. You'll get an email, and it purports to be I'm a member from an international hacker group. As you can probably guess, I have your account and gives you your email address, but that's easy, and was hacked, and I've sent you a message from your account. They say they have your password, which may or may not be your password. They say they've been following you to porn sites. They've been accessing your webcam. I don't have a webcam on my camera, on my computer. And if you don't pay up by Bitcoin, about $800, we're going to send it to everybody on your contact list.
It's scary, isn't it? I've received that exact email. And in my case, it had an actual password that I have used in the subject line.
Yeah.
That got my attention.
That's it.
It scared me a little bit, but it was an old password. I think it, in most cases it is. The password comes from these data breaches we are always talking about.
That's correct.
There have been many of them, and you can find out if your password or email has been compromised in one of these breaches from a great website called Have I Been Pwned? HAVEIBEEN. That's all spelled normally. The pwned is weird. PWNED. HaveIBeenPwned.com. It's a free site. And if you enter in your email address, the email address, for instance, that was sent to, you'll see if that email address has been revealed in any data breaches. I just entered in my main email address and it says, oh no, pwned based on 20 breach sites. We have found Adobe. Anti-public combo list, Apollo, Bitly, Discuss, Dropbox, Evony, Exactus, Exploit, Kickstarter, Last.fm, LinkedIn, Little Monsters, Modern Business Solutions, MySpace. I didn't even have accounts on many of these. Ticketfly, Trillion, and Tumblr all have had breaches with my email in it. And in many cases, password. So that's what this is coming from, is these databases, which are passed around widely. They have hundreds of millions of addresses and password. I'll read you the one I got.
Leo, it does bring up a good point on a reason why to never use your same password everywhere else.
That's right.
If they have one from an old one, who knows what else.
That's exactly right. And that was what really scared me, except that I realized that password I hadn't used in years, it's not current on any of my sites currently. But that's another reason why a password vault like LastPass or 1Password would also be handy, because they will let you know if you've reused passwords. So if you're worried about that, you can go through with a security checkup on a password vault, generate new passwords for those sites, and that's really important to do. Yeah, I appreciate the tip. I'm going to read you with the one I got, and I bet you this will sound pretty similar. These are, I want to emphasize this. You're absolutely right, Jay. These are scams. They haven't done any of what they're saying they've done, but and we talked about this a few weeks ago. The key hackers use to get to you is they need to get you scared. They need to get you jumping. They need to turn off your brain, take off your thinking cap, and act instantaneously. Now, the problem with this scam is it's kind of hard to instantaneously get $1,400 in Bitcoin together. And so I think that's probably why this is less successful than it ought to be. But they're trying to stay anonymous. They're not too bright because Bitcoin is not anonymous. Here's the email. And it's been around for some time, actually. This is a blog post from Brian Krebs on Security, in July. And I found out about it because I got the email and I said, what? And I did a little Googling. Here's the opening salvo. I'm aware that this password is your password, it starts. You don't know me. And you're thinking, why you received this email, right? See, it's a little ungrammatical there, so it tells us the hacker is not a native English speaker. Well, I actually placed a malware on the porn website, and guess what? You visited this website to have fun. You know what I mean. While you were watching the video, your web browser acted as an RDP, remote desktop, and a keylogger, which provided me access to your display screen and webcam. This is why, by the way, a lot of people have tape over their webcam. Right after that, my software gathered all your contacts from your Messenger Facebook account and email account. What exactly did I do? I made a split-screen video. First part, recorded the video you were viewing. You've got a fine taste, ha-ha. And the next part, recorded your webcam. What should you do? Well, I believe $1,400 is a fair price for our little secret. You'll make the payment via Bitcoin to the below address. If you don't know this, search how to buy Bitcoin in Google. There's the flaw in this hacker's scam. He had me right up to that point. What's Bitcoin? And then so he puts a Bitcoin address in, which, by the way, is not anonymous, hacker. You might want to know that. Important. You have 24 hours to make the payment. Now, this is where the hacker's taken off your thinking cap, trying to get you to act immediately without considering. Because if you stop to think, you might go, it's bogus. But if you don't stop to think, he might get you. You have 24 hours to make the payment. I have a unique pixel within this email message, and right now I know that you have read this email. If I don't get the payment, I will send your video to all your contacts, including relatives, coworkers, and so forth. Nevertheless, if I do get paid, I will erase the video immediately. Misspelled. If you want evidence, reply with yes. And I will send your video recording to your 5 friends. Oh, that's good. Only 5? Just to prove it, huh? This is a non-negotiable offer, so don't waste my time and yours by replying to this email. This has been very widespread. It goes in waves. And I bet you it's somewhat effective. I mean, except for the Bitcoin. If they could just figure out a way, you know, just ask for a credit card. Something like that. If they could just figure out a way to get the payment instantly, I think that it would be a lot more effective. Fortunately, that Bitcoin bit stops most people, and they just say, well, I don't know. Let's see what happens. Yeah, it's bogus, Jay. You're absolutely right. You don't have to fear. Nothing's going to happen. And it's sad. This is actually fairly common. The FBI says this is a very common thing. Here's what they say. Never send compromising images of yourself to anyone. Good advice. No matter who they are or who they say they are. Okay. By the way, I just want to point out, Facebook, in an attempt to eliminate revenge porn on Facebook, asked people who are worried about it to send their nude pictures to Facebook so that they could watch out for them. And that was real. That was legitimate. Please send us, if you're worried about revenge porn, just send us those nude pictures. That way, if your ex posts them, we'll know. I wonder how effective that was. That was not a scam, by the way. Facebook is, what is wrong with these people? So the FBI says, don't do that. Don't open attachments for people you don't know. By the way, FBI, I want a little hint here. Most of the time, in this case not, but most of the time, phishing scams come from people you know. They come from your friends, your boss, your family. They're not really from people you know, but a hacker's not going to send it from hacker.com. He's going to use an email address you know. So really, FBI should just say, don't open attachments. And in general, be wary of opening attachments, even from those you do, especially from those you do. I'm just going to edit that. Let me just get my red pencil out. Turn off and or cover any web cameras when you're not using them. Good advice. Jay doesn't have any webcam, so he's safe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. You know, I should do a little ad for LastPass since we were talking about password managers. Why don't I do that? We're talking about the fact that your passwords leak out in breaches, right? This is a big problem. What was it? 81% of breaches are caused by reused passwords, something like that. LastPass solves the problem of password reuse, bad passwords, having to remember passwords, which is a real pain in the butt. You know, I mean, if you think about it, when we were growing up, we didn't have, well, unless you're 18, we didn't have to remember passwords. Most you might ever have to remember is your high school locker combination, right? I always forgot it. I had to always get the janitor to come open it up. But that's neither here nor there. You just didn't have to remember 1,000 different passwords. That's something brand new and dumb. And so people solve this in some pretty bad ways, like having one password they use over and over again, or making up a password that's easy for them to remember, but unfortunately, almost always, easy for you to remember is easy for a hacker to brute force. Good passwords are absolutely critical. And this is at home, but when you get to work, if you own a business, it's even more critical, because all the things you do in your personal life that's bad, your employees are doing, and they're not just doing it with their stuff. They're doing it with your bank accounts, your web servers, your data. So you really, I mean, at home and at the office, you got to have LastPass. You need a great password vault. What does LastPass do? It generates good, long, strong, completely unmemorable passwords. So long and strong that it would take hackers trillions of years to brute force it. And the problem with that is you're not going to remember a 35-character password of upper and lower cases, numbers, and punctuation that's all scrambled up, but you don't have to. LastPass remembers it for you, stores it in your password vault. LastPass's password vault is completely secure. It's never decrypted anywhere but on your system. When you need it, LastPass can't even get access to it. It is completely secure, and it's locked by the one password you do remember. Now, that one's got to be a good one and make it a good one, but then everything else is safe. You can also use two-factor authentication. In fact, I highly recommend it. And that way, even if a bad guy gets your password, they can't get your password vault. LastPass supports that with multi-factor authentication. In fact, LastPass for Business can require it. We do here. In fact, we use LastPass Enterprise here. We want absolute security. You can share passwords. Employees can share passwords without actually knowing the password. That makes it much easier. They just press a button. They're automatically logged in. You can reset passwords, reset accounts. There's actually over 100 different policies. So your IT department has absolute control over what's going on. You get security reports. You can create shared folders. We do that. We have a lot of shared folders. All the DevOps people have one folder. All the programmers have another folder. The business office has a folder. And they put the passwords in there. That way, everybody who needs it has access, but nobody who doesn't has access. And if an employee leaves, really easy to revoke access. I can go on and on. If you use smart devices, iPhone, if you have iOS 12, LastPass autofills now. That's a new feature in iOS 12. Android Oreo, same thing. In fact, that's why the very first thing I do when I get a new computer or phone or tablet, I put LastPass on there, because it makes setting up everything else, all the apps, that much easier. In fact, I trust LastPass so much, I keep my social security numbers in there, all my secure stuff, my password, passports, my driver's license. It's absolutely secure, and I have it everywhere. LastPass works on Mac, on Windows, on Linux. That's really important to me because I use a lot of Linux. It works in every browser. It works on every mobile device. Go to LastPass.com/twit and find out why more than 16 million people trust LastPass, including me. Why more than 43,000 businesses use LastPass. There's LastPass for premium for individuals. LastPass families, we use that at home. It's really nice because you can share passwords with your spouse. And I can give my spouse emergency access. So if I should become incapacitated, she still have access to the bank accounts and all of that. And that's important, too. There's LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. And then what we use, the big boy, LastPass Enterprise. I love LastPass Enterprise also because it allows me to keep my personal account open at the same time as I have LastPass Enterprise with one password. Even better if you use Microsoft Active Directory. That password can unlock LastPass too. Makes it easy for your employees. Makes it easy to have your employees keep your stuff safe and secure. And that's what you really want. LastPass.com/twit. If you're not using it, the only question is why not? Get over there right now. It's very affordable. You ought to be using it. We believe it. I believe in it so much. I've been using it for more than almost 10 years, I think. I believe in it so much that it's part of the employee benefits. They get a free LastPass account because I want them to use it at home as well as at work. LastPass.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Who let these dogs in? Hey, that'd be a good song. Who let the dogs in? Something missing. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Kathy, Los Angeles. Hello, Kathy.
Hi there, Leo. It's so great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
I used to watch you back on the Screensaver days.
Oh, the good old days.
Man, yeah.
Many moons ago.
I have a Asus laptop. It's running Windows 10.
Yes.
And I'm getting a message on the battery icon that it's 64% plugged in, not charging.
Ah.
And, yeah.
Have you tried other chargers and other cables?
No, I haven't done that.
Yeah. So generally, that's what it means. I mean, how old is the laptop?
It's going about 10 years.
Oh! Holy cow! When you said Windows 10, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, it can't be that old. 10 years. Okay, so there's two possibilities. The cheap one is that the cable or the charger is worn out. But after 10 years, this sounds like it might be the battery's worn out. Lithium-ion batteries, which is what powers our phones and our laptops and our cameras and everything these days. It even powers my Tesla. Lithium-ion batteries are great, but they have one little flaw. They only work for a certain number of power cycles. A power cycle is fully charged, fully discharged. Actually, it's the other way around. Fully discharged and then fully charged. That's one cycle. And most lithium-ion batteries have maybe about 500 full cycles that they can do. And after a certain amount of time, they just won't take a charge anymore. And so that could be the source of the not charging as well. So there are Windows, there are programs you can run that will look into your battery and tell you what the battery is doing. Actually, Windows 10 even has this built in. I don't know if it would be enough information for you to figure out if your battery's broken, but I'm going to tell you how to do it. Are you ready? You might want to write this down. You're going to go to the command line for this one, and you type two words. I'll give you the details on how to get to the command line in a second, but just the general gist is you're going to type two words. The first word is power config, but it's spelled funny. POWERCFG. That's one word. POWERCFG. That's a program called, it's the power configuration program. And then you're going to give it a parameter, and that will be /battery report, all one word. So it's power config /battery report. And you get to the command line. Actually, it's pretty simple. You can just hit the Windows key and start. I wonder if you can start typing. Let me see if this will work if I just type it in. Yeah, I think you can. So without doing anything, just hit the Windows key and type POWERCFG /battery report. And that's going to probably tell you. It's a command line. Oh, yeah, see, if you do it the way I just told you to do it, that's not good. You because the window does run, but the window's closed immediately. So hit the Windows key, type CMD, which will open up the command prompt. And then you can type those two words. What it'll tell you is a little bit about your battery. And in most cases, it'll tell you if the battery has any life left, what percentage of charge capacity is left. That's what you want to know. And if it's down to 10% or less, it's not going to hold a charge.
I see.
And that means you need a new battery. Now, in most cases, you can, on the older, you know, modern stuff, I'm just looking at this new extra skinny laptop I was talking about. There's no way you're going to go in there and change the battery. That's going to be glued in. Same thing with most Apple laptops. But an older Asus, almost certainly you can replace the battery. So look on the bottom, see if there's a latch or a lever that you can open up and take the battery out. Now, here is another thing. Now, if you don't mind, you don't have to have the battery if you don't care. If you take the battery out usually and just keep it plugged in, it'll operate just fine.
Okay.
And then, so now you have a desktop computer. It might be a little hard to find a battery for a 10-year-old computer, but you can maybe go on eBay because lots of people have the old computer and maybe they're selling off the parts, that kind of thing.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I'm sorry that that's happened, but man, you got a lot of life out of that thing.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's telling me it's time to break down and get another computer.
Not necessarily. If it's all running fine and you were able to get Windows 10 on it and you're comfortable with how it operates, do make sure you keep Windows 10 up to date and your browser's up to date, all the stuff that goes online, so that you're secure. But if it's running adequately from your point of view, don't listen to them. Just get a new battery or keep it plugged in.
Okay, great.
Okay. It's not my job to sell computers for the computer industry. They might think it is, but it ain't my, that's not my job, man. Actually, we were all excited because last quarter PC sales were up like 4 or 5%. Everybody was all excited. This quarter, flat. Nobody's buying computers. This is kind of cool, though. This is the Acer. This is the thinnest, they say, the thinnest laptop ever made. It's been like 8 millimeters thick. That's crazy. Looks like that battery report is doesn't print out on the command line screen, but instead, I'm looking at it. It looks like it gets saved to your hard drive. So you probably didn't. And then it looks like it's a web page, so you might open it with a browser. That's kind of annoying. They don't make it easy, do they? It's for, you know what? It's for the IT guy. Let's see, battery report. I'm looking at my battery. It says the name of the computer system, product name, BIOS. Oh, that's nice. OS build, platform role, installed batteries, name, manufacturer, serial number, chemistry. Ah, yes, it does. So this is the information you'd want to know. In my case, I have two batteries in this Lenovo. Each design, one design with 23,540 milliwatt hours. And the other 26,000 milliwatt hours, full charge capacity. And then it shows how many cycles. Battery 1 has been cycled 44 times. Battery 3 has been cycled 33 times. So remember I said 500, that's typical. And it will then show you your usage history. Wow, this is a great report. Thank you, Microsoft. What I'm looking for, though, is how much capacity is left. And I don't see exactly that. What you'd like to see is a percentage. Design capacity. I guess what if you look at what the design capacity is, that's the maximum. And what your current full charge capacity is, if the current full charge capacity is zero or very low, you probably can't hold a charge. So the operating system knows. It's nice that it'll tell you. It'll give you that information. John in San Bernardino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Thank you. Yes, I just purchased a Samsung QLED high-definition television. And I'm watching Netflix on it, and it's amazing. The picture quality, I love
it. Great.
But why would I get a high-end, which I'm looking at the Panasonic HD Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Why would I need to get a Blu-ray player with such a great picture on with Netflix?
So you may be getting, if you have enough bandwidth, 4K on Netflix. It's right. It's a great picture. And honestly, I think the future is that people don't buy Blu-ray discs or physical media, but people who are serious videophiles, and you know, maybe that's not you, but people who say, I want the best possible picture, still buy physical media because the quality of a 4K image on the UHD player or an HD image on a Blu-ray player is better than the streaming quality. It's not as compressed. And right. So I'll tell you, okay. Now, this is the equivalent of a spoiler alert. If I tell you what to look for, you might start seeing it, and then you might start being unhappy. So would you prefer that I not tell you?
Oh, please tell me.
It might make you unhappy. So what I always look at to see is something called macro blocking. This is a side effect of compression. And, of course, to get a 4K image down your internet, you've got to compress it pretty heavily. Where you'll see it most is in solid colors. A solid black, for instance.
Right.
Or a solid blue. If you watch something that has that, macro blocking will, instead of showing you a solid color, show you bands. It can't do a smooth gradient between deep, 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 deep black and just a little bit lesser black. It'll do a band. And so you'll see some banding in solid images. If you look really closely, you might see some jagginess in the images. I always look at lettering. That's a good way to kind of judge. And I have to say, Netflix does a very good job with their 4K streams. I watch most of my 4K content, and I have an OLED TV. I spend a lot of money on that, on streaming, and it looks fine. But when I want perfect quality, UHD. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. That's my moniker, and don't wear it out. And I'm here to talk tech, with whether it's computers or the internet or home theater. We could talk about digital photography. Of course, we're all over the smartphones these days, those new Apple iPhones. Anything with a chip in it, the Apple Watch, there's some new Fitbit gear coming out. I have a new fitness ring that I'm using, the Aura, that I really like. Anything like that. Even my ring has a chip in it. I just bought a frying pan and a saucepan that has a chip in it. yeah, it has an app. Everything in my kitchen now has an app. My toaster oven has an app. My toaster oven runs Android. If you have a question about technology, I use this stuff so you don't have to. Just you can ask. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. Outside that area, Skype will do. Just call that number. It's toll free. Jeff in Costa Mesa, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I love your show, and I'm not a geek. So you're reaching what? A big audience.
How could that be?
I'm actually afraid of technology.
Yeah, I understand that completely. And really, the show is designed not for geeks. I do other shows, podcasts for hardcore folk. But I think important that since you're going to be living in technology, that you kind of, I just want to arm people, if you will.
Yeah.
And you have a good reason to be afraid of technology. That's why I do this show, to help arm you.
Yeah, well, I got more afraid because I had both my iMac and my wife's stolen in a burglary, and then 2 weeks later, our friends.
Wait a minute! Your wife was stolen in a burglary?
No, unfortunately, only took her computer. But anyway.
Oh yeah. Oh man, I'm sorry. I thought you said my iMac and my wife were stolen in a burglary. You said your wife's iMac as well as yours were stolen. All right, I'm sorry, and I'm sorry about your marriage. Go ahead. I hope she's not listening. Unfortunately, they didn't take her. No, he's kidding. He's kidding. So what else?
I called Mac and I, you know, I was kind of worried about all the compromising stuff that may be on there. And they said, don't worry about it. They can't do anything with it. And I'm wondering, why would they steal it?
And I don't know why they say that.
Yeah.
So not true. So if you turned on File Vault, which is the Apple encryption built in, they can't do anything with it. If you turned on, and most people don't on a desktop computer, but you can, Find My iMac. They actually have that feature. Say again?
My wife had that one. It actually came up, and it popped on a couple days later, like during lunch Monday, and it was somewhere in like South Compton or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good opportunity. Go right into Find My iMac, and there's a button to erase the contents.
Well, she did that. I think she already talked to him, and she said instead she wanted to hit the block because she thought she may get it back for some reason.
Okay, block. And they said that would work. That's fine. Block probably does something similar to locking the people out of that computer. Here's the problem. Block might work. And what Apple's saying is, well, no, as soon as the bad guys – and by the way, bad guys don't want your data. They want your hardware. So you're probably fine. But as soon as the bad guys got your computer and tried to boot it, you'd get to your password. And they don't know your password, so they go, oh, golly. If a bad guy really wanted it, though, he could get it. He could open up the computer, take the hard drive out, and put it in another computer where they could read the hard drive. Are they going to do that? No. They're there for the money, Bunny. They just want to sell that thing so that you're fine.
So what they'll do is just erase the hard drive and sell it as a hot
They're not. Here's what's going to happen. They're not even going to erase it. They drove off three blocks, and they tried to get somebody to buy it off them because they just almost certainly they just want the cash as fast as possible. The longer they hold on to that computer, the more risk. They might have gone to a pawn shop, but much more likely the reason it's in South Compton, they sold it on the streets for probably $50. Then at that point, the guy who bought it, the sucker, by the way, who bought it, boots it up, and he's getting your password. He knows it's stolen. If he knows Max well enough, he can erase it and make it his. But it's not that easy. He has to hold down Command Option PR and erase it. And I think even certainly with iPhones and iPads, and I bet you even with Max these days, he might even have to enter your password just to erase it.
Yeah.
And in which case he goes, oh shoot, I shouldn't have spent $25 for this Mac. And throws it in the trash.
You know what I wonder is if that's the case. You know, my neighbors, they had theirs stolen too. And why is there a market for them if they just end up being doorstops?
Well, what kind of person burglarizes homes? Not the brightest person in the world, right?
Yeah.
They want. It's the same. You know, they just need cash. They're probably drug addicts. They need cash. The market for these things, iPhones still get stolen even though they're completely useless to anybody but the owner. You cannot reuse it. I don't know if the Mac is that way or not, but it looks like a nice fancy piece of gear, and I can see somebody, you know, giving them $50 for it. They're sure not getting the value for it, which is really sad, right? And of course, it's much more valuable to you than the hardware even because your stuff is on it. That's why two things everybody should be doing. You hear me preach this, backup. Right. So then we did
back up on some exterior hard drives, but I kind of am looking at your Carbonite thing.
Like, a good always up to date backup is vital. You can do it locally. There's all sorts of ways to do it. You don't have to spend money on a service. I mean, I like that idea, but you can do it locally. But the key is to have it and more importantly, keep it up to date because you never know. Although, honestly, if you do it locally, and you get burglarized, I'm so sorry this happened to you, they might take those hard drives too. So that's why something off-site like Carbonite is a good idea. Yeah. And then the second thing you should do, and everybody right now do it, if your operating system offers encryption, Macintoshes do, go into the security system preference pane and turn on what they call it File Vault. And then, no matter what happens, your data is safe. The bad guys can't get into it. You'll want to, you know, make sure you have a good password, but it's encrypted. So even if they took it out of the computer, put it in another computer, they couldn't read it. And that's what File Vault does for you. On Windows, unfortunately, Microsoft only bundles BitLocker, which is its encryption tool, on the pro versions of Windows. They don't put it on home, and I wish they really ought to. They really ought to, because in my opinion, nowadays, especially with solid-state drives, before I use any solid-state drive, whether it's a phone, a tablet, or a computer, I turn on encryption. That way, if I lose it, nobody's going to get my data.
So I'll do that for the next one then.
Yeah. Did you have insurance? Is the insurance going to get you a new one?
Yeah, but it just covers. There's so much that was on it that I didn't back up since
I'm
July.
So sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Anyway, if I get a new iMac, is there anything I should wait for, or are they?
No, they're up to date on the iMacs.
Cool.
No new iMacs this year for sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm sorry that happened. And enjoy your new computer. It's just an excuse to get a new system. Think of it that way. Yeah. Why is there a market? But you know, why is there a market for any stolen stuff? There really shouldn't be, right? Somebody in the chat room, Mars Room, is saying, for Windows machines on Windows Home, Veracrypt. Yeah, that's a good choice. Free hard drive encryption solution, Veracrypt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Yeah, you know, there's no point in asking why people steal stuff. Because it's stupid to do it in the first place. So it's a stupid person. There's no such thing as a smart crook. Actually, I take that back. If you're robbing houses and cars, that's not smart. On the other hand, these banks seem to do very well. So maybe a smart crook might be a white-collar criminal. How about that? In any event, these guys, look at this ring that was here in Northern California. They were doing smash and grabs in Apple stores in broad daylight while the store was open. 17 guys, they come in hoodies, and they'd come in with clippers, and they'd come in, and there's people in the store. They just go down the tables in the Apple stores because everything's on the table, cut the cables, take it with them. Took them 30 seconds in and out. Problem is, you've just run into a store where literally everybody in the store has a video camera, and most of them have it out anyway. So there was a lot of video of these guys. They weren't wearing masks, just hoodies. They all got arrested. All 17 of them got arrested. They had robbed stores all over this area. In fact, our Santa Rosa Mac store got robbed twice in a row. Same guys. And honestly, I don't think they could really do much with that stuff, except give it to somebody and hope that they don't notice that they can't use it. I don't know. Just morons. Morons. But that's the line of work. Jesse and Durango, if you're really smart, you become a lawyer or a banker. Jesse in Durango, Colorado. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am well. I hope you're not a lawyer or a banker.
No.
Okay, good. What can I do for you?
I'm going to have fun listening to the conversation in the background of you guys.
Yeah, when you're on hold, I don't know, this is the little secret here, but when you're on hold, you hear everything that's going on in the studio.
Well, the lasagna sounds great.
Oh, yes, I'm... Well, so we're debating, because it's a long story, but yeah, the lasagna is going to be good. For Thanksgiving, right?
Yep.
It's an Italian tradition.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And turkey, and ham.
The whole shooting match.
What can I do for you?
Well, I have two questions or two things. One, I've got a battery in my Lenovo that does not want to stay charged, even when it's a brand new battery.
Uh-oh.
And then the other is I've been getting phone calls with the machines. And then a person sometimes with a Middle Eastern accent that is offering Windermere Awards. Oh, you're a winner.
Whatever they're offering, it's garbage. Yeah.
Well, I know. Of the fact, I call the number back because I don't have the money to spend back. The number is either stolen or it's one way or another. Either disconnected, and I've called back twice to where I've gotten actual people.
It's all BS. Don't waste your energy. The sad thing is, one expert estimated that 80% of all the phone calls on your cell phone next year will be robocalls like this, will be bogus telemarketing calls. It's most of the traffic now in the cell network, partly, but that's because nobody can figure out what to do about it. You should go to donotcall.gov. And put your phone numbers in there. But the problem is these guys are crooks anyway. They don't care what the federal government says. They're overseas. They're offshore. They're using spoofed phone numbers. Often, this is highly illegal, spoofing the area code that you're from. And sometimes even the exchange, the first three numbers of your phone number, making you think, oh, this must be, a neighbor or the school or somebody. And you got to answer. But it's not. It's a stupid robocall.
Right. Yeah, the other thing was that what I wanted to get, or let folks know, at least the older population, is that you're punching it, if they buy into it, then they figure, oh, I've won one.
Oh, you'll be getting more of those.
Yeah. And that and the fact that if they give them the information, it's already gone, and they've lost.
That's right.
Small fortune.
That's right. Do not fall for this. Apple does not call you. IRS does not call you. Microsoft does not call you. And nowadays, because of this and these scammers, nobody is going to call you. They're going to, find other ways, usually U.S. mail, to get to you. So please don't fall for this. If you get a call from somebody saying, hello, this is Windows, and is your refrigerator running? It's that level of prank. It's stupid. Sometimes, though, it's worse than that because they'll get access to your computer. They'll put malware on it. Most of the time, they just want money from you. All of it's bogus. Do not fall for it. Thank you. Now, as to the Lenovo, you say you bought a new battery and it still doesn't charge.
Yeah. and it's been done twice.
You bought two new batteries. Did you get the batteries from Lenovo?
No, I ended up taking it into the shop, and they had done it, worked on it, and then I took it back because the battery was dying. So I went through it again, put another battery in it, and it was still dying.
And you trust the shop. They're putting fresh Lenovo batteries in, not some battery that some guy had.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
No, I trust them.
Yeah. Then the shop should have look at then the charging mechanism and whether a charge is going into your computer, because that's the only other possible cause of this is that your power brick, the cable, or the connector and where it's connected to the system aren't working, and that's why it's not holding it, not getting a charge, let alone holding a charge. But that's something the shop has to do. It's not something you can easily look at and say, oh, I can see where the problem is here.
Right.
I'm surprised you didn't do that, but yeah, it's time for another trip to the shop. I'm sorry.
Okay. But no, with the other one, when I was saying that, it wasn't Windows. It was like Wyndham Hotels.
No, I know. They're everything. Yeah, there's you just won a trip to Hawaii. Wyndham, Marriott Hotel. I'll tell you the story, when we get back, because the FCC has finally done something about this. Not enough. But there was a guy who made more than 21 million robocalls to sell health insurance over a three-month period. 7 million a month. Finally got busted. We'll talk about that when we come back. Our show today brought to you by Slack. Actually, kind of literally brought to you by Slack. It's what we use at Twit to stay in touch, to communicate. It's better than email. Email has lots of problems. Emails get lost. It's a kind of a feels like a slow kind of asynchronous way to communicate. With Slack, the right people in your team are kept in the loop. The information they need is always at your fingertips. And what's cool about Slack, it's kind of like a messenger program, but you got channels for different projects, different teams. All of our shows, for instance, have a channel. There's a channel for HR. There's a channel for booking. So that way, all the conversations that are about one topic can go in that channel. You can organize everything around projects, offices, or teams. It's easier. It's faster to get things done. And the nice thing about Slack is it can be in real time. You can have, a real-time conversation. Or, and I love this, Slack will let you say, I don't want any messages after 5 p.m. I want to be home with my family. And you get the messages in the morning. I love that. No more searching through emails for that, one follow-up or searching over multiple systems. We keep everything in Slack so we can search it. It's secure. It's locked down. Real-time messaging, but also voice and video calls if you want. Group file sharing. We have the invite list for the company Christmas parties up on our Slack so people can add their names and spouses and all that. Such an easy way to work. Oh, and the reason we ended up with Slack was integrations. I actually asked our team, well, what do you need? And there's various integrations. Jira, we use Atlassian Confluence and Jira from Atlassian. Salesforce, Zendesk, Google Docs, Google Drive. That was how we did the spreadsheet for the Christmas party. It's just a Google spreadsheet. Embed it right into Slack. It actually works with more than 1,000 apps, so it makes it really a valuable information hub for everything you do. Oh, and by the way, iOS, Android, it works everywhere seamlessly. You can do it on the web. You can do it on the desktop. You can always pick up where you left off no matter where you are. I literally have Slack running on everything, on all my devices, so that when my staff or my coworkers need help or need information, I can respond to them quickly. With Slack, your team is better connected. You can learn more at slack.com. Give it a try. I know you've heard people talking about it. There's something happens when people use Slack. They guess they start getting misty-eyed and all evangelical. Oh, you got to try it. It's true. It's the best. Slack.com, where work happens. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. If you want to talk high tech, I'd like to talk high tech with you. In fact, that's what I'm going to do right now with Jesse. Oh, no, I was talking to Jesse. Let's move on to Jerry, Hatfield, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Leo. I consider myself a fairly astute person with technology, but I'm baffled about two things. Are you ready?
Yes.
Put your Sherlock Holmes hat on.
Okay. I do like that Sherlock Holmes thing. Yes.
Okay. Leo, I have a Dish DVR, and I have several TVs. Now, I'm receiving over-the-air transmissions, okay?
Yep.
So I program my TV to go through the channel search, and it saves the channels I got, right?
Okay.
And when I go through the channel listing, the ones that I have saved, there's nothing there. Now, how is that possible if I'm receiving information over the air that the channels exist, but no programming?
Because TiVos don't get their channel guide from over the air.
Leo, not TiVo.
Oh.
The channel.
Who makes the DVRs?
Well, no, I'm talking about the TVs, the televisions. They go through a channel search over the air from the antenna.
So you don't have any internet connected to these TVs?
No, I do not.
Okay. Yeah, the channel guide on over-the-air TVs used to come, I don't know if it still does, from actual over-the-air channels in the frequencies in between the channels. So it may be that, how old is your TV?
Oh, they're new. I get, you know, I mean, they're no more than 3 or 4 years old at most.
Yeah. It used to be the public television stations would offer the sidebands of their over-the-air signal to carry that data. And I'm wondering if they still do that. I seem to remember. I'm going to do a quick see if I can quick search on this, see if I can find this, because I feel like they stopped doing that. So in other words, your channel guide has to be updated regularly, obviously, shows change, times change, and so forth. If you're not connected to the internet, and most DVRs are and get their channel guides from internet sources, TiVo is an example. One of the things that you pay for when you pay for your monthly TiVo fee or yearly or lifetime TiVo fee is that channel guide. You don't pay for it, you won't get a channel guide. But OTA... I'm trying to remember how these channel guides come in. I'm pretty sure it's on the sidebands of the TV channels. Let me just see if I can. I need to find the right Google search for this. Yeah, and I'm not. Chat room, you have any thoughts about this? Or I wonder if we have any experts. He's talking, I believe, about the Let me ask. I cut you off for a second because the connection's very poor. But you're talking about the data about what show you taped and all that, right?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm talking about the televisions. When you program your TV itself to do a channel search, lock in the channels.
Yeah.
When you go back to that guide, the channel listing, that channel is not. They'll have a listing there for that channel, but it'll say it does not exist.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry. I completely misunderstood. Yeah, the scan goes through and says, oh, I see a signal here. I see a signal here. Adds up a guide. And you're saying it's not getting saved after you go through. You have to go through the scan each time in order to use the TV?
No. No. Channel list is saved. It went through its scanning. It saved, let's say, 20 channels.
Okay.
But when you go through those channels, some of them do not exist.
Oh, it's finding non-existent channels.
Yeah.
Okay, just delete them from your channel guide.
Well, but why would it save it, though?
Because it thinks it heard something. So that is an imperfect system. I'm sorry. I made this a big deal out of this, and it didn't have to be. So the way it's doing is it's stopping at each, you know, channel, each frequency where there would be a TV, and saying, is there anything here? And if it thinks... there's the key word. There's something there. It'll add that channel to your channel guide. It's not a perfect system. Sometimes it thinks it heard something when all it heard was... And so it remembered it. And you can just go through. And that's why there is a feature, I think you probably noticed, of deleting channels from your channel guide. You may be... it's related to how bad your phone sounds. You might want to get a better antenna. The signal might be... You know, there might be noise in the signal. there was a lot of noise in your phone. I'm wondering if there might be some noise in your environment. Perhaps it's related to that. I don't know. I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question. On we'll go. I'm just going to punt and go to Carmine in Chicago. Hello, Carmine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I am well. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I was looking at the Surface Book 2s, and the issue that I'm running into is that I would like 16 gigs of RAM, but I don't necessarily need the i7 processor or the extra video card. And if I do that, just to get my 16 gigs of RAM, I got to spend another $1,000.
Yeah.
The way they can figure.
Yeah.
They,
Microsoft has figured it out, huh?
So I was wondering if there's any possible way I can buy the, even if it's a more complicated endeavor, to buy the $1,400 8 gig version and install another 8 gigs of RAM in there? Is that just
not easily. Are you buying it from Microsoft?
Yeah.
They're still selling the Surface. Oh, yeah, they are. The Surface Laptop or the Surface Book, you said?
Surface Book, too.
They're still selling that. Yeah. I'm sorry, Surface Book. I was thinking Surface Pro 2. The Surface Book is a nice machine, actually. I had the original Surface Book. Didn't buy the Surface Book 2. That you might be able to add RAM to, because that's a more standard laptop. Let me just... the best way to do that is to go to a company like Crucial or Micron that sells RAM, and they'll have a RAM selector, and you enter in your model or the model you're thinking of buying and see if they sell RAM for it, and then they might even have a video. I'm going to look on, great place for this, by the way. Highly recommend it. Reddit, and go to the Surface Reddit, and let's see. Can you add RAM? Yes, it is upgradable. So that's the good news. It is upgradable. You could open it up. You might want to go to one of these sites because you're going to want to go anywhere to get the RAM. And in most cases, they'll have videos on how to do it. And then look at the video and see if you feel comfortable with the operation.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
That's
a good idea. Oftentimes, you can get the RAM for less than the company. Certainly, it's true for Apple. A lot of people will do that. Then Apple getting wise to that, now Surface mounts the RAM and you can't upgrade it. But yeah, it looks like, let's see, it does look like you can upgrade it. So Crucial, Micron, anywhere that sells upgraded RAM, those are two big, well-known and reliable brands, and you can do that. I thought you were talking about the Surface Pro 2, which I wouldn't recommend getting. We're up to the 6 now, Surface Pro 6. Surface Book is actually a pretty nice machine. It's a little odd. It's the one with that weird clothespin hinge. But the reason they did that is for stability, because the Surface Book 2 has a battery in both the screen and the keyboard. And that's so you can detach the screen and make it a tablet. It's got this big mechanical, it's kind of like the docking port on the Apollo space probe. It's chunk, dunk, grump, and there's a button, and it's got these weird electric springs. And if there's a flaw to the Surface Book, it's that. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. We've got a line open right now. Actually, we've got 6 of them open right now. There must be some Clemson game or something. 8888-ASK-LEO, give us a ring. I bet you saw the Village People in their prime. That's Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, a disco fiend, and our gizmo wizard. We call him the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D. Did you ever see the Village People, the Indian, the construction worker, the cop, the motorcycle guy?
Absolutely. And the construction guy used to live in this neighborhood, so I used to see him.
You see him walking around in this yellow helmet?
No.
He didn't. Are they still around? Are they still?
You know what? I think one or two of them is, but they just said, no one really knew
who they
pretty
were.
Pretty much exactly who they were.
Right.
So I think they just show up at nightclubs.
Some guy in a construction vest.
Hey, can you be
I'm the Village People. But you can't go to a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a party of any kind without playing that song at least once.
No.
And everybody does the YMCA.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's great. It's just great.
It's very uplifting. You have to. I think your mustache was inspired by the Village People, come to think of it.
Well, you know, one year I went to a costume party as the mustache guy.
You could totally
in the
pull
Village
that
people.
Off. Yeah. So Dickie D, besides being Mad's maddest writer for forever and ever, is our gizmo wizard. He has great gadgets in Gizneyland, and he brings them to us each week. What do you have this week for us, Dave?
Well, you know what? Last week, I have another gadget from the Luxury Technology Show. Okay, so you were not sold totally on the wine cabinet with the robotic arm.
No. Although okay. I would, now, if it weren't so expensive, maybe.
Maybe. All right, how about this? The Smart Flower Solar Tracker. Okay.
Smart. Now, it seems like they're combining terms that aren't related.
Well, this at the event, this was out on the street because it couldn't fit in the building. So this is,
you know, I've been out on the street. It's no fun. Why was it out on the street?
Okay. So it's a solar panel.
Oh, it's huge.
Huge. Looks like a flower. And yes, and if you go to my website, I'm standing next to it. It's about, I guess, 12 or 13 feet high. But so it has GPS and it totally follows the sun, the angle of the sun.
Oh, like a sunflower. It aims itself at the sun.
Sun.
Does that mean it generates more electricity or is it just cool?
Now, the company says it generates up to 40% more than a fixed solar panel.
Oh, okay.
Because this can not only move around, it can flatten out so that it gets more of the sun as the sun is going down.
Ah.
And I said to the guy, well, what happens when the wind comes up? And he said, well, at 29 miles an hour, the solar flower lays flat. So there's almost no wind resistance. And then when the wind starts toward 39 miles an hour, it just folds itself closed so that
this is kind of cool. Because, I mean, like, I can see it at festivals, rock concerts, that kind of thing. I could see it at, you know, events like chili cook-offs. But I know that there's going to be a pretty hefty price tag for this.
Yeah. It is almost $25,000. However,
it's cheaper than the robotic wine cellar. We got to admit.
Yes, by half. And the government does not give you 30% back on the wine cellar.
Oh.
But if you're a business or residential, the guy said you get an automatic 30% rebate from the government. If you are a business, you get the 30% back and you can totally write it off. He said the first year as a business expense. It's part of business equipment.
Kind of cool.
It's pretty neat, isn't it? And there's two versions. There's the one version that powers for the home, and there's a second version that has built-in batteries. You decide how many batteries you want in it. And that way, if the power goes out, it can just keep your house going. They have an option on it where you can plug your car into it if you have an electric car. So it's pretty neat. It's from a company. I forgot the name of the main company. They build commercial solar for industry. And this is like their first home product. So I think it's pretty neat.
I would ask how many kilowatt hours it generates.
Yeah, you know what, Leo? It's 6,500.
I said I would ask, but I'd have no idea what the answer means.
Oh, good, because I just made that up. No.
We have solar power on our house. We have 30 panels. Which is all that our local electric company would let us install. They didn't want us to go into competition with them.
Oh, how funny.
They said you can only install as much solar power as you use currently. You can't over-install. And I thought, well, why not? If everybody put an extra 30% in, you know, and then that's the problem. We put PG&E out of business, which, in my opinion, is not a bad thing at all.
No. Wouldn't you like to every month send them a bill?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You owe me for all this electricity I didn't use.
Well,
yeah, this is
exactly.
Cool. I would like to find out how this compares to our, you know, roof installation.
Yeah. So the guy said, This will power a smaller house, a cabin.
It's smaller.
If you have
like a mini
big,
a mini house?
I think he said an igloo. No, I'm not sure. He didn't give me square footage.
Yeah.
But if their website has
I love it, though. It opens up in the morning. It follows the sun. And then it folds up at night. I mean, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. And it tracks the wind and then moves out of the way if it gets windy. Yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah. I think it's pretty neat.
The website is smartflowersolar.com. But the best thing to do is go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website. Because not only will you find the smart flower solar power system, you'll find lots of other stuff that he's mentioned on this show and other shows. He's a man about town. He also has his own podcast, gizwiz.tv. And if you go to his main site, gizwiz.biz, and click the What the Heck Is It button, you get a chance to guess what that gadget, that close-up picture of a gadget or a gizmo is. And if you might win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine.
Ooh. I never saw it on television. Wow. Ooh.
This is the new, I know what this is, by the way. This is the new privacy forward Ring Video doorbell. It doesn't have a camera. It just looks like it does.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Yeah. It just scares the crooks away because they think you have a camera, but it doesn't actually take it. You know, our 15-year-old, I guess this is part of being a 15-year-old. We have cameras all over the place in the house for security, right? They're only on when we're not home. He goes around and unplugs them all.
Oh, my gosh.
Or he'll throw them behind the couch so all they're getting is darkness.
Oh, my gosh.
I guess he doesn't want any video. No pictures.
No pictures,
No
please.
Pictures, please.
Oh, my God.
Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz. Yes. Thank you, my friend.
Okay, Pally, I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining me this week. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering the calls. Most importantly, thanks to you. It just would be silly for me to talk here if you weren't here. Thank you for being here, and I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.